goals are pretty much a to-do list for the whole world. Clean water, no poverty, gender equity, justice, those kinds of things. So that's really where my work is, in sort of the transformative space between all of those goals, because unless we have a larger whole that we're thinking this through on, then it's very hard to accomplish one thing. We won't get to one of those goals unless we accomplish all of them.
Welcome to the My Future Business Show, where we get you in front of your best audience and keep you there. Not only are we interviewing the biggest names in business to help you become even more successful, we're inviting you to book your spot on the show to help you grow your business. So at the end of the call, make sure you fill in the interview application form at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. Hi, and welcome back to the My Future Business Show. My name's Rick Nusky. I'm on the line today with Joni Carley. We're going to be talking about leadership. We're going to be talking about her wonderful new book, The Alchemy of Power. Welcome to the show, Joni.
Hi, great to be here.
Yes, absolutely. I've been looking at your bio as we've just been talking about. It's a long and illustrious career. You know, you've got the United Nations in there. You've got so much to share with the My Future Business audience today, and can't wait to talk about many different things. But the first thing I'd love to talk about is you, where you're located and what you like to do when you're relaxing.
Oh, well, I'm located in Media, Pennsylvania, and I play music. That's
fantastic.
One thing I do relax. I swim, and well, and I also am an interfaith minister, and I put on a huge solstice celebration every year with a super hot band, lots of percussion, dancers, celebrants of different spiritual persuasions, and we have a really deep and high time.
So, yeah, look, I suspect this time of year is kind of ramping up, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
You'd be very busy. Now, what sort of instrument do you play?
I sing, play piano and djembe, African drum, and some guitar.
Fantastic. Now, speaking about African drums, I know through your bio that you've been well-traveled, and I'd love for you to talk to us a little bit about your experiences as they apply to your work.
Okay, well, the trip that I talk the most about in the book is when I stayed with the Shwa tribe in the Amazon. And the Shwa were, or usually aren't, headhunters, depending on who you ask. And they were really amazing. We got there, you know, like on dugout canoes and with jungle boots with mud up to our knees. So, and a lot of hiking in the jungle. And so their culture was amazing, though. I learned so much from them. They were very, very truthful. There was a lot of trust built between them, which was a good lesson on culture for me. Yeah. There's no lying. There's no stealing. There's very little material things to be had there, and the nature of the jungles that it churns life very quickly, so things just kind of almost disappear into the mud.
Yeah.
Because bacteria are really working overtime there. So and then, you know, everything you do, like we took some really long hikes where the people in front of us were bushwhacking, the tribesmen were bushwhacking as we went through this lush vegetation, and you know, there was a lot of rain, and so the river had come up 4 feet, so we had to do a whitewater crossing on a rope. Hand almost lost my life. Everywhere, we were climbing up these 20-foot cliffs, and you got to grab onto something, and fire ants could come down your arm.
Oh,
you know?
They're no good.
Yeah, no, I just got to the bathroom, you know, with scorpion issues.
Oh.
So, you know, it was, there's this immediacy. There's something that really brings you present when you're, and I stayed in Africa also with a tribe that, you know, no running water and lots of elements to manage. And you have to stay really, really present. And that's something that's so important for good leaders. And, you know, the other thing about that is culture, that the Shwa had built a culture of trust. And even though they were very independent, their huts were very far apart. So if you went to visit people, it was a long walk.
Yeah.
But still, family was real important. They had a lot of time for good times, for family. And they were really fun to hang out with. They laughed, and they were just joyful people.
Yeah, thank you so much. How long did you spend with them?
I spent about 10 days with them, and another almost 2 weeks with the tribe of Malawi.
Mm-hmm. So is this a global thing that you've obviously traveled elsewhere, and part of that book talks about, I guess, meshing your views and experiences with different cultures from, you know, Western society and other places. What is some of the difference, and what are some of the commonalities, I guess, in terms of leadership?
Well, Tim, culture really comes down to values. And so when there's differences, there's values differences. And sometimes they're not as wide as we think, and sometimes they're really far apart. But even when they are far apart, people respect other people's values. If I know you're doing something to fulfill your values, I can say, well, you know, that's not that important to me, but I get it. You know, I can get that. I can live with that. And I can sign on to maybe supporting some of that. And so that's really what distinguishes, and what I've learned, and my expertise is in values-driven leadership and cultural development.
Yeah.
And what I've learned is that values and culture are determinant of outcomes. I have a study on this that, I mean, it's just unequivocal. These studies are in from all over the world and in every capacity. And Schwab do it instinctively, you know, the intuitive mind does. I've studied the indigenous mind. I've studied with a lot of Native Americans and some Native Japanese and others, and that they all come down to, you know, really understanding that internal energy, that drive.
Now, listen, for everybody who's on the call today, Joni isn't, you know, just somebody who you should just look past. Absolutely not, because Joni has been deeply involved with the United Nations. She has spoken to this very topic whilst she was working with the United Nations. And I guess, Joni, I'd love to learn a little bit about that experience. Would you mind sharing some of it with us?
The United Nations is one of the most amazing places in the world. It's the only place where when you say we, you mean the entire world.
Yes.
And next year it's going to be 75 years old, but in terms of a global agenda, that's pretty young.
Yeah.
So in a way, it's barely in its teenage years as far as, you know, pulling the world together. And the world did agree on a common agenda for the first time in 2015, to which are called the Sustainable Development Goals. And there are 17 goals that every single country in the world has signed on to, which is already something right there.
Yes.
And goals are pretty much a to-do list for the whole world. And they're pretty much everything you would imagine. Clean water, no poverty, gender equity, you know, justice, those kinds of things.
Common good.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really where my work is, in sort of the transformative space between all of those goals, because unless we have a larger whole that we're thinking this through on, then it's very hard to accomplish one thing. We won't get to one of those goals unless we accomplish all of them, right? You can't really keep the exact same economic structures and have something different happen in the matter of where water's going.
Yes. Yes. You know, this is a fascinating field, Joni, because if you think about the different cultural values and the mindsets from different leaders across the globe, it must be a real challenge to bring these heads, if you like, together to get that commonality. On that, what is some of the, I guess, the transformational processes that you have to work through to get to that point?
Well, I did not work directly on those as they were being pulled together, but many, 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 many people from all over the world did work on that. And so that's really how you do it, is you include all voices to the greatest extent that you can. And that's what I do as a consultant, is I use the Barrett tools to actually capture what the values of all people are and get them in one clear data set so that we actually can quantify the culture according to what people's values actually are and what they want to see happen.
I mean, that's a very high level view of it. And I suspect it takes many, many hours and many conversations. How powerful.
No, it doesn't. It's a 20 minute online assessment.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
But it's been used in thousands of companies and for whole countries. And, you know, it really just says, what are the people's values that are there? What are the current values in the organization? And what do we want? What are the aspire to values?
Right.
And so, see, what are the current values? And you see things like politics, corruption, control, you know, there's negative values show up too. And so you start to get a good snapshot of who are these people and what do they want, you know, what's authentic to them. And then the aspire to, you see, what's the common vision here? What do people, where do they diverge and where do they converge in what they're after? When you have that aligned vision and it's all inclusive, you know, that's what we're learning about leadership and everything else. This UN agenda got so far because they went slow to go fast. When you stop and take, you don't have to stop, but when you commit what it takes to build a culture, it takes some time.
Yeah.
And especially depending on where your culture is currently. So, but if you put that time in, then you go slow to go fast, you can really go off to the races.
I've got so many questions. They're just bubbling away in my head. I wonder, you know, when you have an active outlier, for example, in an organization who is, you know, actively resisting change and this is a new leader that's come in, what are some of the techniques that that people can use that you know about?
Well, again, my favorite thing is to come down to values, to look at, you know, what kind of values is this person expressing and where do we find that common ground, you know, and where, what, because when values lead the way, then the dialogue tends to be healthy around those things. Otherwise, I'm going to push against this guy, right?
Yes,
I'm going to keep him from hurting me. I'm going to not let this happen. Well, you know, it's just like I've got this glass and I'm attached to the glass no matter what, you know.
Yeah.
You have to put it down and go to a different ground if you're going to really, you know, if I'm pushing away from it, it's a Buddhist concept. As long as you're pushing it, you're holding it, right? So if you're pushing this guy, you're holding that dynamic in place, and all you're going to get is push, you know, until somebody either has enough power to crack somebody else up or has enough charisma or, you know, whatever it is. But it's not going to be healthy. It's not going to build.
It seems to me that you love study, you love to learn, you love to spend time continuing your growth. In the world right now, who are the people that you're looking to that you see as good leaders?
Well, I think President Obama was an amazing leader. He inspired us. He gave us real vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the current leadership is pretty disappointing here in the U.S. So.
look, that's—I think that's an observation that's globally felt. Let's say.
Yeah. You know, Google's done a pretty good job of, you know, keeping people really, really building culture, building people, growing people. Every large company has its issues. I think. Angela Merkel is a really good leader who I appreciate very much.
She's the German counselor, Chancellor?
Uh-huh.
Yes,
yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, because there are lots of struggles.
Yeah,
isn't there?
But you know, there's so many leaders who are famous, who just either have learned, and this is a new approach to leadership. You know, there's still kind of a lot of old, what I call old paradigm leadership going on of you force things to happen, you know.
I'm the leader, listen to me sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's tempting because it feels faster and easier, but it doesn't work. You know, there's some really clear studies that whoever has done the most values development in the room has the most authority regardless of rank. So you could be standing with the CEO and the janitor.
Yep.
And, you know, the janitor may not have the power to do everything or the charisma or the rank, but that's, people are really going to listen to and follow if that person's done more values development.
Isn't it funny? Because I've seen this in workplaces historically where you talk to somebody like a janitor and because of that charisma, people are naturally attracted to that individual. Whereas that, you know, stand back CEO that you never see should be that same person with that level of charisma, do you think?
It's not a question of introvert or extrovert. It's really a question of who is this person? Because they could not say a word and still have more authority, right? There are people who are pretty quiet, but when they talk,
that you listen.
And there are people who have a lot of charisma who are pretty bombastic and obnoxious.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. So that's really what we're saying is that we used to think that bombastic and obnoxious and, you know, whatever the sliding scale is that isn't quite so bad, that those things are really the mark of a powerful leader. But that's not what power is. Power is much more subtle than that. And most of power is invisible.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing this. It's wonderful. Yes.
powerful side job.
Absolutely. I noticed that you have rows and rows of books in your space there. You love reading.
I love reading.
So are you reading anything at the moment?
I've been reading my own book.
As
I
you
do
do.
because it just has come out. So I do readings. I've been reading a book about the effect of quantum physics on organizational development. Like, what are the correlations between that?
Wow, that's pretty deep stuff. So,
I can say every summer, I'm going to get a novel. My pile's just so big that I don't. And right now I'm reading about the natural turn of the season, the light and the solstice. And, because no matter what you believe, the earth turns the same for all of us.
absolutely.
But when we come down into this kind of season, it takes us all somewhere, no matter what we
You
believe.
know what? I'd like to explore that because, as a somewhat intuitive person, I generally get a feel for a conversation. I have lots of conversations, and I notice that certain times, including festive seasons, that people's, I guess, their energy picks up. They seem, or at least on the surface, to be nicer for whatever reason. Now, how can that affect
Needs a
leadership?
reason, right? Like that.
How does that affect leadership in the workplace from a seasonal perspective? Do you think that has an impact?
I think to recognize that there are cycles where there's a front, there's a back, and part of the human condition is if you're going to go up, you're going to go down. And to honor the dark times too, to me, that's a big part of the solstice, is to say, it brings up memories, it brings up pains, it brings up, for me, one of my reasons to get out of bed is I want all kids to go to bed safe, fed, and warm. And I know that however leaders are at whatever level of business their work happens at, that's going to affect that. So this time of year when I have, I live in comfort, how about those kids who are in refugee camps or, who are right in the next town? Who aren't doing as well, And what we're finding out now is that when leaders step up and run whatever business they have from a values-driven perspective, their profits go up, their stakeholder loyalty goes up, their efficiency goes up. Pretty much anything you'd want to measure goes up in a business.
Do you think philanthropy, those leaders with that philanthropy approach, the giving, I guess, attitude also do better than those who don't give?
So, and yes, I mean, giving is good. Giving's really good. I would start there. And at the same time, we're living in a paradigm that's demanding more and more philanthropy because it's fundamentally unjust, economically unjust. And so, sometimes I used to run a philanthropic foundation, and I know that you can do good projects, and I had drawers full of successful outcomes, and yet the census data hadn't really changed in any good way. And so, how do we dig deeper? And that's really where my work is more at the UN and NGO is we dig deeper by working toward setting up a new paradigm. And any businesses that have set themselves up in that way, like Zappos, Google, there's a lot of and even small nonprofits, and everything in between, when they set themselves up this way, good things happen. And you get out of that cycle of haves giving to have-nots, haves giving to have-nots. You create a much more synergistic and more happiness and well-being.
And there's a couple of people that come to my mind. There's an individual, he feeds for every $1 million that businesses offer, he'll double it, and he does this regularly. Things like that really tick the boxes for me. They're fighting a good fight, and it's well worth fighting, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. The other side of giving is giving thanks and gratitude, that attitude of gratitude for everything, even for the troubles and the dark times. And that's what this time of year is about, is giving thanks even in the dark, even when we don't even think we can get out of it,
And that's where my concept of having 2 feet and a heartbeat and not complaining comes into it.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
That's absolutely true. Now, I'd love to shift gears, if we could, Joni, to your wonderful book, and let's break it down. First of all, leaders, current leaders, what are they collectively thinking, do you think?
Well, I don't think there's an is there. I think for a lot of reasons. First of all, there you can't ever at any time say all leaders are thinking this.
Mm-hmm.
But especially now, because I do think we're in a paradigm shift. I do think the world's calling for new ways of doing things. You know, the left and the right are the same old box, which is not turning out to be a plan anymore.
Yeah.
And so we're finding that those who step out of the box, because they do so much better when they step into, you know, what I'm calling a new paradigm, new way of working. And the leaders who are making that transition are really thriving. The giving is built into the system. It's not something they do after they get this, after they get that, after they get this, you know, it's built in from day one. And so that's a whole different thing. And the old paradigm leaders who are still functioning under that kind of, thinking that they have authority by being forceful, those people are not doing this well. They're struggling. Some of them are getting louder. Some of them, but they really risk being blindsided by their own irrelevance, because the world is clearly going in a different direction in terms of just a more just and compassionate economic priorities.
Yeah. It seems to me that as each new generation comes along, we have to shift with the, I guess, the moving sentiment. Now, I wonder is if I'm an older leader and I see this shift in sentiment and, you know, new generations are coming through, is it very difficult, do you think, Joni, for leaders to relearn or unlearn what they do and take a different approach?
Yes. No, first of all, when you follow values, it's way easier because they're the most dynamic drivers in any human being's world. So in that way, it's easy. But, you know, letting go of old ideas and old ways of thinking is not so easy. But it's not a generational thing. There's a demographic that has been kind of aiming at this new paradigm, certainly beginning in the 60s. And that demographic, it isn't seen as a coherent demographic. It's getting more and more coherence, but that's because it cuts across age, it cuts across gender, it cuts across economic position. It really cuts across all other demographics. It's a demographic of consciousness. And there have been a lot of people saying for a long time, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to take some steps. I'm willing to open my mind. I'm willing to let my heart be my guide. And that's not to say let my mind go. The Native Indigenous, one of my Native Indigenous teachers here in America, she said there used to be sign language between tribes, and the sign for wisdom was to touch your head, touch your heart, and bring your hands together. And so that's what's important, is find that wisdom as a leader. And that has nothing to do with age.
Yeah, that's great insight. You know, there's so much to be learned from this, you know, very, very deep and expansive topic. And I really appreciate you spending some time with us to do that. Now, interestingly, how did you come up for the title of the book?
Well, I have been, you referred in the beginning, I've been all over the place. I've walked a path of many paths. And a lot of those paths have been really studying what is it that drives people? What is that, you know, what creates success? What creates thriving? And so that's taken me down to learn a lot of metaphysics. And metaphysics is the field of both philosophy and science of causality. So it's the study of what causes what. And in the old paradigm, that whole area was sort of relegated to fluffy. I call it the fluffy myth in my book, right? Oh,
yeah.
That stuff's airy fairy. Doesn't count. Once you get all the numbers in place, then you can maybe think about that as a luxury. Well,
yeah.
That's absolutely nothing. There's no data anywhere that backs up that myth.
Yeah.
But we're all kind of steeped in it. So alchemy is the ability to take these metaphysical principles and cause things to happen because you said so, because you because you aligned the what it takes. And a lot of the way I like to talk about it is with the word mojo. So mojo is that energy that you know is unique in each of us and common to all of us. And I like to describe that energy as you could put all the elements of the carrot in a lab dish, but you can't make a carrot because we don't have metaphysical capacity,
yes,
right?
Yes.
We don't know how to manage that mojo.
Yes.
Right? Yep. But we know a lot about managing mojo. And, you know, we know what dampens it and what makes it thrive. And it doesn't matter if you're in a three-person office or, you know, the UN or a 60,000-person organization. I mean, studies are pretty clear, you know. So alchemy is really bringing together that sort of the data, the hard stuff. It's the yin and the yang. I go into this in my book. You bring together the hard data, which is important, with the yin, with one of the hearts and souls, and values are the go-between word between those two things. That's why they're so valuable, is they tie the tangible with the intangible.
Yeah, so when somebody opens this wonderful book, is it a cover-to-cover read, or is it more like, a guidebook that they can flick to certain sections? How would somebody consume this content?
No, it's both, because it is a cover-to-cover read because it builds on things that are unpacked in the beginning. It would be hard to understand the middle or the end if you didn't have the principles that are unpacked in the beginning. Hard to really make the beginning be worthwhile if you don't get the context from the end.
Yep.
That being said, every chapter has reflections, leadership reflections at the end of it, and those are evergreen.
Yeah.
Those can be any time in any career. You could flip to any of those questions. They're coaching questions, basically. But, you know, they're a way to come back to the center. They're a way to open up dialogue with other people. They're a way to hear yourself think or to bring a question to someone that you trust. You know, someone like me as a professional consultant, or to someone, you know, someone who you trust who can take you further. Those questions not, you know, made for bar talk.
yeah, absolutely. Plus,
you know, but you want to go to some depth with these, but you want to apply it. It's really about tying the rocks to the clouds. And so, you know, I think once you've read it, and I think the glossary is really helpful too. And I think that would be referred back to over time, and then maybe specific chapters.
I wonder about leadership in books like this is, you know, we talk about leadership as a parent, we talk about leadership in the corporate space, in tribes, as we've spoken about earlier. Is this a book that anybody can take some value from, do you think?
I believe so. I really do, because I do think it brings the rocks to the clouds and, you know, to the demise of to the upset of my publisher. I blew through a lot of deadlines because I took a lot of time to unpack and translate these metaphysical principles into a usable format that would be accessible, applicable, you know, applying it to metaphysics, to what's on somebody's desk right now.
Yes, that's fantastic. I wonder, are you doing much consultancy work?
I do, yes. I am a consultant, and so I do a number of things. Some of that is at the UN, but a lot of it is with private clients.
Fantastic.
And it can be everything from one-on-one coaching and consult, and or cultural development, where we come in and we assess your culture, and then we debrief and unpack, and according to your results, figure out some things that we may want to do with the team.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And also, look, we have the ability in the same tool to look at how your culture stacks up with these 17 sustainable development goals. And you can see where the natural alignment is in your company to see, like, how you're stacking up in the world.
Yep.
Again, start to be clear of how am I doing in this new paradigm economy that's emerging. We can give real data on that. And then when that data is clear, that's something we can build on, but I don't pre make up a package before that. I want to work on what's the true data in your organization.
So when somebody comes to you and they're looking to work with you, they're a private sector, government sector, doesn't really matter, I don't suspect, but is there this online sort of application thing we spoke about before, that I guess that profile set, is that the first thing?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that's about 20 to 30 minutes.
and not all my private clients do that, but you know, organizationally, that's where I do like to start, because again, there's nothing like the data.
Yeah.
I think of myself as a wise wonk. I like the data. I like the numbers. And I like the other piece, that the humanity that goes around that, and that really truly drives the mojo.
Yes. Yeah, well, you most certainly come across as wonderful and warm and very intelligent, and in a position that you can very much help people to, you know, create better leadership, better culture, and things of that nature. So thank you very much for the work you're doing. Now, importantly, Joni, when people want to buy your book and start working with you, where are they going to find you?
They can find my book at Amazon.com, The Alchemy of Power.
Yep.
And not to be confused, there's another alchemy book about Karl Marx.
Okay.
That ain't.
That's not the one.
It's not the one. It's purple. It's got a big purple cover.
Look out for that one.
My website is JoniCarley.com, and that's JoniCarley.com.
Well, there you go, everybody who's on the call today. This has been an absolute jam-packed call talking about leadership, culture, all of these wonderful things. And I will be making the links back to Joni and her work so that you can contact her, start working with her. Joni, it's been such an absolute treat spending some time with you on the My Future Business Show today.
Hi, Rick. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed the call, then make sure to subscribe, leave a comment, share us with your friends, and book your spot on the show at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. And if you're looking for solutions that will help grow your business, then visit myfuturebusiness.com/shop.